So that's unwed parenting in the movies. But what about in real life? The increase in children born out of wedlock has had serious and far-reaching consequences for families and for society at large. A new book, Unmarried Couples with Children, is believed to be the first in-depth study of who unmarried parents are and how they're managing. Professor Catherine Eden of Harvard University and Professor Paula England of Stanford University are co-editors of that book, and they both join us now. Welcome. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Given that you've studied this question so extensively, and there's so much sort of pop culture mythology around who these families are and what they're like, can you just give us a couple of examples in which our perceptions really differ from what you found out in your research? Professor England, if you'd start.
I think the main thing, misconception, is that people think that women having a birth out of marriage don't have a partner, and usually she still is romantically involved with the father at the birth, even though the relationships often break up.
Professor Eden?
Yeah, so that's really important. You know, most of these babies enter into the world to a couple. Half of the time that couple's living together. The second big thing that the media gets wrong is that this is not primarily a phenomenon among teenagers. Teenage pregnancy has been going down over the time. Non-marital childbearing has grown because more adults and more whites are choosing to engage in it than had been true previously.
In movies like Knocked Up, unmarried parents, you know, wind up having a cooperative relationship, end up living together. It's sort of the movie kind of ends with the idea that they've sort of decided to commit to each other for the long haul. Is that true in real life?
Well, it is interesting. In many ways, I think it is true that in the middle class, when we think about having a child together, you think of a child as an outgrowth of a relationship that's already there, that's a solidified relationship. It's kind of a representation of a commitment. But we found that among these unmarried couples with children, oftentimes the relationship was kind of ad hoc. There was an accidental pregnancy. There's a sense in which there's not a whole lot to lose, by the way, among these very disadvantaged folks when they do become pregnant. And once they're pregnant, they try to get it together for the sake of the child. So the relationship is really all about the baby.
Given that your research shows that many of these couples consider themselves together and may wind up even living together, why don't they get married?
This is Professor England. The simplest answer that they give us when we ask them is, we don't have our economics together yet. In the old days, couples might say, well, we can't get married because we can't afford to get an apartment on our own, move out from our parents, and we can't afford having a baby. But these couples oftentimes are already living together. They've already had the baby, and yet they'll still say, we want to get married, and hopefully we will in the future, but we have to get our economics together first. So it seems like what they mean is that marriage has taken on a kind of cultural meaning that you're supposed to have certain things economically in place before you get married. And they're holding marriage really to a higher standard in a sense than they held getting pregnant and taking a pregnancy to term.
Does that come from religion? Does that come from...
This is Kathy. Most of the couples in the study are not extraordinarily religious, but yet you hear words like marriage is sacred. I'm not going to get married just to get divorced because that would be making a mockery of marriage. So you hear this religious language over and over again, even among people who are not religious. And what we think that means is what we think that refers to is this very high standard of marriage. Sometimes people say to us, well, you know, Professor England or Professor Eden, your couples just don't value marriage. And we often reply by saying, in some ways, it's almost like they value marriage too much so to sully this sacred, precious institution with their own less than perfect relationships. They want to make sure they engage in marriages that last. The worst thing that can happen from their point of view is to get married just to get divorced. That's a bad thing to do.
Speaking of divorce, I mean, we do have a high divorce rate in this country and in others. And I think it's considered kind of common wisdom or at least a sort of an assumption that the reasons that couples who marry get divorced are disagreements over money, disagreements over sex, and oftentimes people would say disagreements over kids. What are the reasons that these couples break up? And also, I think I'd want to ask, too, is their rate of breakup pretty much the same as for married couples?
No, the rate is much higher. And one of the sad things is, you know, we told you on the one hand that 80% of these unmarried parents are still romantically involved at the birth and half are even living together. But in fact, over half break up within 5 years. And that is a higher rate of breakup than you would see in the average birth inside a marriage. And here's what's interesting. It's economics that they say keeps them from getting married, but it's usually not directly economics that leads to the breakup. The breakups are usually over conflicts and oftentimes very bad behavior on the part of men, sometimes cheating, you know, sometimes involvement in crime, sometimes involvement with drugs. At some point, the women just put the men out.
Yeah, and these relationship problems are serious and real, and they're oftentimes problems that few of us would put up with for very long. So it's not like they're breaking up sort of flippantly because they don't feel like staying together or working hard. It usually is a result of some very serious problems, infidelity probably being the leading cause of breakup.
Infidelity being the leading cause of breakup? That's interesting. So one of the things you're finding is that these couples really value children and they really value marriage. But what you're finding out is that the men in these relationships don't necessarily value fidelity. And I wonder if that's the difference between the men who get married and men who don't.
This is Paula. It's hard to figure this out. You know, in all groups, married and unmarried, in all social classes, I think the data show that men cheat more than women. But actually, if you ask people in surveys, you know, 95% of the population in all social groups say that within marriage, you're not supposed to cheat. In these unmarried relationships, maybe people don't think the norm is quite as strong, although the fact that they'll get really upset and call it cheating if their partner does it, either the man or the woman, suggests that, you know, there is somewhat of a norm. But sometimes the situations get more ambiguous.
Can I give you an example of one of our couples?
Sure.
To speak to Professor England's point. A young couple in Chicago, a fairly stable relationship, again, cohabiting without being married. So in those situations, whether the couple is together or not is always a bit ambiguous. She, one morning, is called into work, and she's told she'll be doing some heavy cleaning. So she takes her engagement ring off and leaves it on the bedroom bureau. Her boyfriend, the father of her child, wakes up, sees the ring on the table, assumes they've broken up. And by the time she gets home from work, he's already gone out and had an affair with another woman. So it's a bit of an extreme example, but it speaks to the ambiguity of what the relationship is. Because the fact that you're not married means that you're really not sure this is the right one. Or you're really not sure that this relationship is suitable for marriage.
Do these couples want these children? Are these children planned? In the way we're used to, in the way we're used to thinking of, you know, couples saying, okay, it's time, you know, we're going to start now.
We struggled with the data on this question a long time and asked parents about this particular question over and over again because their answers were so confusing. And there are really two themes in the end. First of all, there's a strong positive orientation toward children. The poor really see children as the center of meaning and identity, particularly since there's so few sources of meaning and identity available to them outside of having children. So in some sense, these unplanned pregnancies are, in a sense, planned or at least ambiguously wanted. But there's another thing going on here, and that is that the poor often have a hard time aligning their behavior with their goals. It's really hard to use birth control in the meticulous sort of way that it requires to keep from having a baby. And when you're living in a chaotic environment and your circumstances are somewhat chaotic, it's hard to do that. And so we also see a behavioral part of this, that young women and young men are getting into situations they didn't intend, in part because they're not able to follow through with the kinds of behavior that lead to successful contraception.
Paula England is a professor of sociology at Stanford University. She joined us from their studios in Stanford. And Catherine Eden is a professor of public policy at Harvard University. She joined us from their studios in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Remember, with Tell Me More, the conversation never ends. We're interested in your take on how families are organizing themselves these days, the growing number of kids born outside of marriage, your experiences with adoption. Tell us what you think. To tell us more about what you think, to read what other listeners are saying, please go to our blog at npr.org/tellmemore. You can also call our comment line at 202-842-3522. Again, that's 202-842-3522.